Welcome to the deep dive. We've got a ton of material here on data quality.
Yeah, a lot to unpack.
I'm really looking forward to digging in with you and, you know, unearthing the gems hidden in all of this.
It's a mountain of information.
It is. It really seems like everyone's talking about data these days, but how can we be sure that the data is actually, you know, reliable?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, right?
That is, and that's what we're here to explore today.
Absolutely. You know, that's so crucial because garbage in, garbage out, right? Like, we can have the fanciest algorithms in the world,
right?
But if the data we're feeding them is bad, our insights are going to be worthless.
Worthless.
Or even worse, misleading.
Right, yeah.
Which is not a good situation to be in.
No, definitely not. So let's unpack that a little bit.
Okay.
The sources talk about data transformation being a key step in ensuring quality.
Yes.
What exactly is going on there? What does that even mean?
So, imagine this. You're trying to make sense of customer data, but it's spread across different systems like sales, marketing, customer support.
Right, sure.
Each system has its own quirks, you know, its own formats, maybe even errors.
Mm-hmm.
Data transformation is like, think of it as the master chef who takes all these different ingredients and preps them, cleaning, chopping, standardizing before they can all be combined into this delicious meal.
So it's about getting all your ducks in a row before you even start looking at the data.
Exactly. Okay. And the sources, they highlight this process called ETL.
ETL.
Extract, transform, load.
Oh.
Where the data is pulled from different sources, cleaned up, standardized, and then loaded into a...
like a central...
central repository, like a data warehouse, something like that.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of challenges... The sources go into some common data quality issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one that jumped out at me was duplicate data.
Yes.
It seems so simple, but I have a feeling it's more insidious than we realize.
Oh, absolutely. It is. It's like that uninvited guest who just overstays their welcome, eating all your snacks, hogging the couch.
Right, right.
It might seem harmless on the surface, but it can lead to all sorts of problems down the line.
Like what kinds of problems?
Well, think about wasted storage space.
Oh, right.
If you're storing the same information multiple times, not only are you using up valuable resources, but you're also increasing the risk of inconsistency.
And I imagine it can also skew your analysis as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like if you're trying to analyze customer behavior and you have multiple entries for the same customer, it's going to distort your results.
Right.
You might think you have more customers than you actually do, or you might misinterpret their purchasing patterns, things like that.
Yeah. And it's not just about the numbers, right?
Yeah.
Duplicate data can lead to real world headaches.
Oh, you're so right.
Yeah.
Imagine, think about receiving multiple marketing emails for the same product.
Or getting billed twice.
Or getting billed twice.
Or the same purchase.
Exactly. It's frustrating for customers.
Yeah.
And it can really damage a company's reputation.
Definitely. So what can we do about it?
Well,
the sources mentioned things like system warnings and duplicate resolution processes.
Yes. So prevention is always the best medicine, right?
Right. Yeah.
System warnings can nudge users to avoid creating those duplicates in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have you ever seen those? Are you sure you want to submit this form again? Pop-ups.
Oh, yeah. All the time.
Those can be lifesavers.
Yeah, definitely.
And if duplicates do, you know, slip through the cracks, there are duplicate resolution techniques to identify and either merge or eliminate those duplicates.
So, you know, get rid of them, basically.
Get rid of them.
Okay. That brings us to another challenge. Redundant data. The sources are careful to distinguish this from duplicate data.
Mm-hmm.
It's less about accidents and more about intentional duplication.
Right? Exactly. Redundant data is like having multiple copies of the same book on your bookshelf.
Okay.
You know, it might be convenient to have a copy in your bedroom, living room, and office.
Right.
But it takes up a lot of unnecessary space.
Yeah.
And it can lead to confusion if, you know, one copy gets updated and the others don't.
Right. Yeah.
So keeping track of all those different versions.
So how does redundant data even creep into our systems in the first place?
It often stems from the way our systems are designed and integrated.
Okay.
Like, think about a company with separate databases for sales, marketing, customer support.
Right, yeah.
If each database stores customer information, which a lot of them do, you're bound to have some redundancy in there.
Right, and that can lead to things like conflicting values.
Yes.
Like, different addresses for the same customer.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And when you try to integrate those systems into a central data warehouse,
right,
those inconsistencies can create some major headaches.
Yeah, I bet. The sources actually walk through a scenario like that,
mm,
where inconsistent customer addresses,
yes,
in the sales and accounting systems cause all sorts of problems in the data warehouse.
It's a classic example of how that redundancy,
yeah,
can really undermine data quality.
Okay.
And the solution often lies in a well-designed ETL process,
right,
that prioritizes data consistency.
So you got to have that one source of truth.
Yes.
That data warehouse,
yeah,
reflecting the most accurate information.
Exactly.
Even if there are discrepancies in the source systems.
That's the goal. That's the goal.
Right. And the sources also point out that core database design itself,
oh yes,
can be a breeding ground for redundant data.
Absolutely.
They give that interesting example of the consulting company's billing table.
Oh, yeah.
Where all the information, the employees, projects was all jumbled together.
It was a mess, a complete mess.
I can only imagine.
Just imagine trying to update employee information.
Oh, gosh.
Or track project costs with a structure like that.
Yeah, no thanks.
It'd be a nightmare. But thankfully,
yeah,
there are database design principles like normalization,
okay,
that can help eliminate that redundancy and create much more efficient and reliable systems.
So normalizing is a good thing.
Normalizing is a very good thing.
Okay, good to know. Moving on, let's talk about missing values, or also known as nulls.
Yes, nulls.
The sources emphasize that nulls aren't just empty spaces.
Right.
They're the complete absence of a value.
Exactly.
Why is that distinction so important?
Because a null value can really impact your analysis, especially when it comes to calculations.
Okay.
Imagine you're tracking the daily temperature using a sensor, right?
Okay.
If the sensor malfunctions one day and doesn't record a reading,
mm-hmm,
you have a null value for that day.
Right.
Now, if you calculate the average temperature for the week,
yeah,
that null value can skew your results.
So it's not just about the fact that there's data missing.
Yeah.
It's about understanding how that missing data can influence,
yes,
the bigger picture.
Exactly. And different tools handle nulls differently, which can add another layer of complexity.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So some tools might just ignore nulls in calculations,
okay,
while others might treat them as zeros or even throw an error altogether.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So knowing how your tools handle nulls is crucial for making sure your analysis is accurate.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, shifting gears a bit, the sources also discuss invalid data.
Okay.
And they make it clear that this isn't about incorrect data types.
Mm-hmm.
But rather about values that kind of break the rules of the game, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's all about context, really.
In context.
Okay. A value might be perfectly valid in one context, but completely nonsensical in another.
Okay.
Let's stick with that temperature sensor example, okay?
Okay.
If the sensor records a temperature of, say, -99,999 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's pretty cold.
It's a valid number, right?
Yeah.
But it's clearly not a valid temperature reading for planet Earth.
Right, yeah.
So it's about understanding those nuances,
yeah,
and not just relying on those surface level checks.
Right, okay.
And invalid data can be particularly tricky to catch,
well, yeah,
with text data.
Okay.
They mention this concept of referential integrity, which is like having a rule book,
okay,
that ensures data consistency across different tables in a database.
Okay, so can you give me an example of that?
Sure. So imagine you have a database for an online store.
Okay.
You have a table for customers and a table for orders.
Mm-hmm.
Referential integrity ensures that every order, mm-hmm, is linked to an actual valid customer,
mm-hmm,
in that customer table.
Okay.
If an order is placed with a customer ID that doesn't even exist,
right,
that violates referential integrity and indicates a potential data quality issue.
So it's like a safety net.
Yes,
exactly. That's preventing us from creating these nonsensical relationships in our data.
Exactly. And when referential integrity is absent, it becomes much harder to catch that invalid data, especially with text values.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, the sources also introduce non-parametric data.
Yes.
Which sounds a little intimidating, to be honest.
It's not as scary as it sounds.
Okay, good.
Non-parametric data simply refers to data that comes from categories rather than numbers.
Okay.
Think about a pain scale, where you rate your pain from 0 to 10.
Oh, yeah, at the doctor's office.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those numbers on the pain scale don't have an inherent meaning.
Mm-hmm.
It's the categories they represent: mild pain, moderate pain, severe pain.
Right.
Those are what give them context and significance.
So it's not about the numbers themselves,
yeah,
but about the qualitative information they represent.
Precisely.
Okay. Speaking of context.
Yes.
The sources bring up another data quality challenge
mm-hmm.
that I always find really interesting. Outliers.
Outliers.
Those data points that just seem to defy all the norms.
They're like the unexpected plot twists in a movie. They can be intriguing, alarming, or sometimes just plain confusing.
Right. And the tricky thing is they're not always errors.
You got it.
Right.
An outlier could be a legitimate data point
yeah.
that simply reflects a very unique situation.
Yeah.
The sources use a real estate example
okay.
where a sale price is significantly higher right. than others in the same neighborhood.
Okay.
Turns out it's a commercial property, which explains the price difference.
So context is key.
Context is everything.
Yeah. An outlier in one context
yes.
might be perfectly normal in another.
Absolutely. And that's why understanding the why behind an outlier is so important.
Right.
Is it a genuine anomaly? Is it a data entry error?
Right.
Or is it something else entirely?
Yeah.
That determination will guide how you handle that outlier.
Okay. That makes sense. The sources then introduce something called specification mismatch.
Yes.
Which sounds very similar to invalid data.
It is similar. It is similar.
What's the subtle difference there?
It's all about the focus.
Okay.
Invalid data violates the rules within a specific data field.
Okay.
A specification mismatch means the data doesn't conform to the requirements
okay.
of its intended use.
Oh, okay.
Like, say you need a 2x4 for your home renovation project and yeah. you end up with a 2x6.
Right.
Both are valid lumber sizes, right?
Right, yes.
But yeah. they don't meet the specific needs of your project.
Right, okay.
So it's a matter of perspective.
Perspective.
Is the data inherently wrong
mm-hmm.
or is it just not the right fit for okay. the task at hand?
Okay, that's a good way to put it. And that brings us to data type validation.
Yes.
Which the sources emphasize is all about ensuring consistency, especially when loading data.
It is. Data yeah. type validation is like that meticulous chef who double checks every ingredient before adding it to the pot.
Right.
You want to make sure everything is in the right format to avoid a culinary disaster, right?
Right, yeah.
Imagine you're loading automotive data into a system.
Yep.
And you have an invalid manufacturer ID.
Right.
That's a string instead of a number.
Okay, so what? A single incorrect entry?
Yes.
Can derail the entire process?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
And that's why data type validation is crucial up front.
Okay.
It's about caching those inconsistencies early on.
Right.
And preventing them from cascading through all your systems.
Okay, so data type validation, super important.
Very important.
That's our covet. Now that we've explored all of these data quality challenges.
Yes.
Let's move on to some of the techniques that we can use to tackle them.
Okay.
The sources list this whole arsenal of data manipulation techniques, recoding, derived variables, data merging, data blending.
It's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah.
It can seem a bit overwhelming, but it's like different tools in a toolbox, right?
Yeah, okay.
We choose the right tool depending on the job.
Right. So let's start unpacking some of these tools. First up, recoding.
Okay, so recoding is all about transforming data to make it more suitable for analysis.
Mm-hmm. Remember that pain scale example we talked about?
Yeah.
You might have those numeric pain scores, right?
Right.
But recoding them into categories like mild, moderate, or severe can make that data much easier to analyze and communicate.
So it's about making the data work for us,
yes.
not the other way around.
Exactly.
Okay. And then we've got derived variables.
Derived variables, that's where we get to create something new
okay.
from existing data.
Yeah, give me an example.
Okay. So imagine you have a data set with people's birth dates.
Mm-hmm.
You can derive their age from that information.
Oh,
creating a brand new variable that's directly relevant to your analysis.
Right. So you're not just stuck with what you're given. You can create new insights, basically.
Exactly.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
The sources talk about merging and blending data.
Yes.
Are those two different ways of combining data?
They are.
Okay.
So imagine you have customer data spread across different systems, sales, marketing, customer support. Data merging is like taking those separate pieces of a puzzle and fitting them together to create a complete picture of your customer.
So we're enriching our understanding by bringing those different perspectives together.
Precisely.
Okay, I like that. And then what about data blending?
Data blending is a little different.
Okay.
It's more about combining data on the fly,
okay.
usually for visualization or reporting purposes.
Okay.
Like say you're using a tool like Tableau to create a dashboard.
Right.
You can blend data from those different sources without having to permanently merge those data sets.
Okay, so it's more flexible.
Much more flexible.
It allows you to, you know, kind of play around with different combinations.
Exactly.
Without disrupting those underlying systems.
It's like trying different spices and flavors right. without having to rewrite the entire recipe.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
But the sources caution that data blending
yes.
requires a good understanding of how data maps across systems.
Absolutely. We need to be really careful
yeah.
about how we combine that data
right.
and make sure we're not creating misleading results by blending apples and oranges.
Okay, so you got to know what you're doing, basically.
You're doing what you're doing, yes.
Okay, so we've got merging and blending. Then there's concatenation, which sounds like we're literally stringing data together.
You got it. Concatenation is often used with text data.
Okay.
Like, imagine you have separate columns for first name, middle name, and last name.
Right.
You can concatenate those columns
okay.
to create a single full name variable.
So it's like taking scattered words and forming a complete sentence.
That's a great analogy.
Okay.
And it's often used with date and time data as well.
Okay.
So you can combine separate columns for year, month, and day
right.
into a single date variable.
Okay. They also mentioned data appending.
Yes.
Which seems like a simpler way of combining data.
It is. It's like stacking Lego blocks. Oh. If you have two data sets with the same structure, same columns, same data types,
okay.
you can simply append one data set to the other to okay. create a larger data set.
So appending is for data sets that are already aligned.
Yes.
Via right. structure.
It's a straightforward way to combine data when you're dealing with similar sources.
Right. Okay. Next up, imputation.
Ah, imputation.
Sounds like we're dealing with those missing values again.
We are. Imputation is all about filling in those gaps. Imagine you're analyzing a weight log and some entries are missing.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just ignore those missing values.
Yeah.
They're going to skew your analysis.
Right.
Imputation techniques allow you to replace those missing values with estimates
okay.
based on the available data.
So you're basically making an educated guess?
Yes.
About what those values might have been?
Precisely. And the choice of imputation method can really impact your analysis.
Oh, what?
You might choose to replace missing values with the average, the mm-hmm. median, or you might use more sophisticated algorithms
mm-hmm.
that take into account the relationships between different variables.
So it gets pretty complicated.
It can.
Okay. Now, onto a technique that seems particularly relevant
mm-hmm.
in this age of big data.
Yes.
Reduction. It sounds like we're simplifying.
Yes.
Not oversimplifying.
Exactly. We live in a world of data overload. Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes we just need to shrink those massive data sets
mm-hmm.
down to a manageable size
right.
without losing valuable information in the process.
So there's an art to it, I guess.
There is.
The sources mentioned two main types of reduction.
Yes.
Dimensionality reduction
yeah.
and numerosity reduction.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
So dimensionality reduction is like decluttering your closet.
Okay.
You're getting rid of unnecessary items, in this case, variables or attributes,
right.
that don't contribute much to your analysis.
Yeah.
So like imagine a data set with hundreds of columns.
Right.
Dimensionality reduction techniques
yeah.
help you identify those most important variables and discard the rest.
So you're focusing on what matters. Okay. And then numerosity reduction is about...
Numerosity reduction is about reducing the overall volume of data.
Okay, so the amount of data. Got it.
Like, imagine you have millions of data points,
mm-hmm.
but you only need a representative sample
okay.
to get a good understanding of the trends.
Right.
So numerosity reduction techniques, like sampling and aggregation,
okay.
help you condense that data without sacrificing too much information.
Okay. Speaking of aggregation,
yeah.
that's another technique that seems crucial for making sense of large data sets.
Absolutely crucial. Aggregation is all about summarizing that raw data
okay.
to extract meaningful insights.
Okay.
Like, imagine you have a data set with thousands of sales transactions.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of looking at each individual transaction,
yeah.
you can aggregate that data
sure.
to calculate total sales by region, sure. by product category, by time period.
So it's about seeing the forest for the trees, basically.
Exactly. It's about getting that big picture view.
And aggregation can also help us protect privacy.
Right. Absolutely. Instead of sharing individual level data,
yeah.
which can be very sensitive,
right.
we can aggregate the data
okay.
to report on overall trends
right.
without revealing that personal information.
So very useful technique.
Very useful.
Okay. Next up, transposition.
Transposition.
Yeah.
This is where we rearrange the furniture
okay.
in our data set.
I like that.
So transposition is about switching rows and columns. in a data set.
Mm-hmm.
It's like rotating a spreadsheet 90 degrees.
Okay.
Sometimes a simple rearrangement can make that data much easier to analyze.
So it's about finding the optimal layout for the data.
Yeah, the optimal layout.
Depending on your analytical goals.
It's like organizing your bookshelves. You might arrange them by genre, by author, or even by color, right?
Right.
It depends on how you want to browse your collection.
Right. Okay. And finally, we have normalization.
Normalization. This is a good one.
Which, in this context, is about bringing data onto a common scale.
Exactly.
Right.
Normalization is particularly useful when you're comparing variables that are measured on completely different scales.
Okay.
Imagine you're analyzing athletes' height and weight.
Right.
You can't directly compare inches to pounds, right?
Yeah.
So normalization allows you to bring those variables onto a common scale, making those comparisons much more meaningful.
So you're creating a level playing field.
A level playing field, exactly.
Okay. The sources mentioned a specific technique called min-max normalization.
Min-max normalization, yeah.
Which scales data to a range between 0 and 1.
Yeah, it's a very common and straightforward approach.
Okay.
But there are other normalization techniques as well.
Right.
The key takeaway is that normalization allows you to compare apples to apples.
Apples to apples. I like that.
So to speak,
yeah.
Ensuring that one variable doesn't overshadow others, right?
Simply because of its scale.
Okay, so it's all about making sure things are fair and balanced.
Fair and balanced, yes.
Okay, good. The sources then dive into the world of text data.
Yes, text.
With techniques like parsing and string manipulation.
That can get a little messy in there.
So what exactly do those entail?
So parsing is like deciphering a secret code.
Okay.
Imagine you have a column that contains both gender and age range information.
Okay.
Parsing allows you to split that column into two separate variables, making the data more structured and much more usable.
So you're taking something that's kind of jumbled together.
Yes, jumbled together.
And making it more organized.
Exactly.
Exactly. Right. And then what about string manipulation?
String manipulation is all about modifying or transforming that text data.
Okay.
Imagine you have a data set with inconsistent state abbreviations.
Okay.
Some are uppercase, some are lowercase, some are missing altogether.
Right. Messy.
Messy. Messy. Yeah.
String manipulation techniques allow you to clean up those inconsistencies and ensure data consistency.
So you're bringing order to the chaos.
Bringing order to the chaos, exactly.
Okay. Well, we've covered a lot of ground already.
We have.
From duplicate data to normalization and everything in between.
A whirlwind tour.
It really seems like data quality is this complex beast with many different facets.
It really is. And understanding all of these challenges and techniques that we've discussed so far, that's just the first step.
Okay.
We need to think about managing data quality proactively throughout that entire data life cycle.
That sounds like a great place to pick up in part two of this deep dive.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
So we've explored these common data quality pitfalls, and it's clear that just cleaning up data after the fact isn't really enough.
No, not at all.
The sources really emphasize proactively managing quality across that entire data life cycle.
You hit the nail on the head.
Okay, good.
It's like building a house, you know?
Okay.
A strong foundation is absolutely key.
Right.
If we're not careful about data quality from the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
all those efforts we put in later on
might
be completely in vain.
Right. Wasted effort.
Wasted effort, exactly.
The forces point to several critical stages.
Yes.
Where we need to be extra vigilant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's walk through those.
Okay.
First up, data acquisition.
Right.
Where are we even getting this data from?
Yeah, where's it coming from?
And what red flags should we be watching for?
It all starts with knowing your sources
and
understanding their limitations.
Right.
Take, for instance, using sea ice data to plan shipping routes.
Okay.
Super valuable data, right?
Yeah.
But if it's not updated in real time,
using
outdated information could lead to ships getting stuck.
Oh, no. Not good.
Not good at all. Yeah. We need to understand the timeliness, the accuracy of our data sources to use them appropriately.
So even before we start cleaning and transforming data,
we
need to make sure it's fit for purpose.
Exactly, fit for purpose.
In the first place.
From the very beginning.
Right, okay. What about when we're collecting data directly from users?
Yes, user input.
Yeah, I'm thinking like online forms.
Oh, yeah.
Surveys, that sort of thing.
That's a breeding ground for data quality issues.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Why is that?
Well, you know, people make mistakes.
Right. Typos.
Typos. They misunderstand instructions, all sorts of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
The sources recommend influencing data quality early on.
Right.
By validating user inputs.
Wow.
For example, if you have a field for car models,
yeah.
instead of letting users type in anything they want,
right.
provide a drop-down list with validated options.
Oh, okay, so limit their choices.
It prevents typos, inconsistencies,
right.
and makes the data much cleaner from the get-go.
So it's like those forms that force you to enter your phone number in a specific format.
Exactly.
A little annoying sometimes.
Humbling.
But ultimately, you know,
yes.
that makes sure the data is consistent.
Exactly. It ensures consistency.
Okay. So we've acquired the data.
Yes.
What happens next?
Then comes the transformation and conversion phase.
Okay.
And that's where things can get even trickier.
Oh, how so?
Well, the sources point out that each time we transform data,
okay.
you know, cleaning it, standardizing it, converting it, we increase the risk of introducing errors.
Okay.
They have this fascinating example of customer order data flowing through multiple systems,
right.
with each system applying its own transformations.
Oh, okay.
It's like a game of telephone, you know?
Right.
The message can get distorted along the way.
Okay, yeah. So how do we mitigate that risk then?
Well, one key strategy is standardization.
Okay.
Especially for things like addresses and names.
Mm-hmm.
The sources describe a process where customer entered addresses are compared to postal standards and validated before they're stored.
Right.
This ensures consistency and reduces the chances of those errors down the line.
That reminds me of those websites that automatically correct your address as you type it.
Exactly.
A small detail.
Small detail.
But it can make a big difference in data quality.
Huge difference.
Yeah. And let's not forget about data conversion.
Oh, yes. Data conversion.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to analyze athlete data from different countries.
Okay.
Some might use the metric system.
Mm-hmm.
Others, imperial.
Right.
We need to be very careful about converting those units of measure to ensure consistent and accurate analysis.
Okay. So we've tackled acquisition.
Yes.
Transformation.
Transformation.
Conversion. Conversion. What about when we start manipulating the data for analysis?
Yes. Data manipulation.
Yeah.
Powerful tool.
Right.
But also a potential source of errors. You know, restructuring tables.
Right.
Changing data types.
Mm-hmm.
Even simple calculations.
Yeah.
All of these actions can introduce inconsistencies if we're not careful.
So even if the initial data was clean.
Yes.
Things can still go wrong during the analysis phase.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It seems like vigilance is key at every step.
Vigilance is key, yes. And the sources really advocate for automated validation as a safety net.
Okay.
By setting up these automated checks, you know, for data types, number of records, even reasonable values.
Right.
We can catch those errors early on.
Right.
Before they snowball into these bigger problems.
So automation. Our friend.
Our friend.
In data quality.
Yes.
Okay. So we've talked about the when of data quality checks.
Right.
Now let's dive into the how.
Okay, the how.
How do we actually assess whether our data is, you know, good enough?
How do we know?
Yeah.
The sources provide this really handy framework.
Okay.
Six data quality dimensions.
Six.
Six dimensions.
Okay.
That help us evaluate our data from different angles.
All right. So what are those six dimensions?
They are accuracy, completeness, consistency, timeliness, uniqueness, and validity.
Okay. A lot to unpack there.
We've got a lot to cover.
Yeah, let's break those down. Yeah. First up, accuracy.
Accuracy.
What does that actually mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
In the context of data.
So accuracy is all about how well our data reflects reality and serves its intended purpose.
Right.
It's not always about having the most granular information, but rather having the right level of detail for the task at hand.
Right. So not too much.
Not too much.
Not too little.
A little.
Not too little. Just the right amount.
Goldilocks zone.
Goldilocks zone. Exactly.
Okay.
The sources, they give this example of zip codes.
Okay.
For some analyses, a 5-digit zip code might be perfectly sufficient.
Okay.
But for others, like optimizing delivery routes or calculating regional demographics, we might need the full 9-digit code. So accuracy isn't one size fits all.
No, no.
Depends on the context.
Context is key.
Yeah.
And the questions we're trying to answer.
Right. Okay. Then there's completeness.
Completeness. This refers to having all the essential data points.
Okay.
For our analysis.
Okay.
It's about striking that balance, right?
Right.
Like, do we really need someone's middle name yeah. for a marketing campaign.
Probably not.
Or is first name and last name enough?
Right.
It's about being practical.
Practical, yeah.
And not bogging ourselves down with unnecessary data.
So quality over quantity?
Quality over quantity, exactly.
Okay. What about consistency?
Ah, consistency. This ensures that our data is reliable
okay.
across all those different systems.
Right.
The sources have a great example of this.
Right.
A hotel with separate systems for reservations and loyalty programs. If a customer updates their address in one system, it needs to be updated in the other system as well
right.
to maintain consistency.
So everything matches up.
Everything matches up, yeah. Otherwise, yeah. we risk, you know, sending them promotional offers to the wrong address.
Oh, right.
Or having conflicting information in our reports.
It's like making sure all the clocks in your house are set to the same time.
Exactly.
It might seem small.
It might seem small.
But it saves you a lot of confusion.
A lot of confusion.
And frustration.
And frustration, yes.
Okay, good. And then there's timeliness.
Timeliness. This is particularly important these days.
Yeah.
In today's fast-paced world, right?
Right. Things change so quickly.
They do.
Outdated data can lead to, you know, poor decisions.
Absolutely.
Missed opportunities.
Imagine a marketing campaign targeting customers with products they already own.
Oh, yeah.
What a waste of resources.
Yeah.
We need to make sure our data is current and relevant to the decisions we're making.
Right. So it's fresh, basically.
Fresh data.
Okay. Next up. Uniqueness.
Uniqueness. This is all about avoiding those pesky duplicate records we talked about.
Oh, right, yeah.
Uniqueness is about ensuring that each data point is distinct and meaningful.
Okay.
The more unique our data is, the yeah. less we have to worry about synchronizing it across systems and resolving conflicts.
So less headache.
Less headache, exactly. Mm. Going back to that hotel example.
Okay.
Having a single centralized source of truth for customer data.
Right.
Eliminates the need for constant updates
right.
and reduces the risk of inconsistencies.
Right. So uniqueness is not just about saving storage space.
No.
It's about streamlining those data management processes.
Exactly.
And ensuring data integrity.
Data integrity, yes.
Okay. Finally, let's talk about validity.
Validity.
Which the sources also refer to as data integrity.
Yes. It's all about making sure our data makes sense.
Okay.
Within the context of our business rules and constraints.
Right.
They highlight the limitations of relying solely on those data type checks.
Okay.
A value might be a valid string, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean it's a valid state abbreviation or a realistic customer age.
Okay.
That's where validation rules come in.
Okay.
Ensuring that our data adheres to the real-world constraints of our business.
So it's about going beyond those technical checks.
Yes.
And making sure that the data is meaningful and reliable in a practical sense.
Exactly.
So these six dimensions,
yes.
they work together.
They do.
To give us a holistic view of data quality.
A holistic view.
But how do we actually put these dimensions into practice?
That's a great question, and I think it's a perfect segue
okay.
into the next part of our deep dive.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
We've talked about these six dimensions of data quality.
Yeah, six dimensions.
But how do we actually measure and monitor them? I mean, right. it seems like a pretty daunting task.
It can be.
Especially with all this data.
Especially with, the ever-growing volumes of data we're dealing with these days.
Yeah, it's not something you can just, like, eyeball, right?
No, definitely not. You need a more systematic approach. The sources talk about this idea of data quality rules and metrics,
right.
which act as these objective yardsticks for assessing the data.
Okay, so like a ruler for data quality.
Exactly. They specifically mention data conformity,
okay.
which encompasses several of the dimensions we've already talked about.
Okay.
Accuracy, consistency, uniqueness, and validity.
So it's about making sure that data from all these different sources
yes.
plays nicely together in our target environment.
Exactly. They use this example of varying last name field lengths in different systems.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
I can see how that would cause a real mess
yeah.
during data integration.
Yeah. One system has a limit of 20 characters for last names and another allows up to 30.
Right. And then what happens when you try to combine that data?
Yeah.
You risk truncating those longer names.
So you lose information.
You lose information. Exactly. The sources suggest some strategies for dealing with this, like using a
what do they call it?
bad data staging area.
So like a quarantine zone for data. That doesn't quite meet the standards.
It allows you to isolate and correct those non-conforming records
right.
before they contaminate the main data warehouse.
So you're keeping the bad apples away from the good ones.
Exactly. You don't want the whole bunch to spoil.
Right. Okay. So we've got our dimensions. We've got our metrics.
Yep.
But how do we actually put these into practice?
Right. How do we use them?
Yeah. What methods can we use to actually validate data quality?
The sources outline a range of methods.
Right.
From simple common sense checks to more sophisticated techniques.
So like a toolbox with different tools for different situations.
Exactly. You pick the right tool for the job.
Let's start with the basics.
Okay.
What about those common sense checks?
Right.
The ones that don't require, you know, fancy algorithms or software.
Those are often called reasonable expectations checks.
Okay.
And they involve, well, using our knowledge of the data and the business.
Okay.
To set these benchmarks and look for any deviations.
So, like, if we typically receive, say, 10 million transactions per day.
Right.
And suddenly that number drops to 2 million.
That's a huge red flag.
Yeah.
Something might be wrong.
Yeah. Something's definitely off.
Yeah. The sources emphasize the importance of automating these checks
okay.
and setting up alerts
right.
so we can catch those anomalies quickly.
So like a smoke detector for your data.
Exactly. It lets you know when something's amiss.
Okay. I like that. What about some of the more sophisticated techniques?
Well, there's data profiling,
okay.
which uses statistical measures to uncover inconsistencies
okay.
and patterns that might not be immediately obvious.
So it's like a detective.
Yes.
Examining all the evidence for clues.
Exactly. Looking for those subtle hints.
The sources gave that example of a customer loging in excessively.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one.
From all these different devices.
Right. Which raised suspicions of fraud.
Yeah.
Profiling helps us identify those outliers and anomalies
mm.
that might indicate, well, data quality issues or even security risks.
So it's not just about bad data. It could be about malicious activity.
Absolutely. It's about protecting our systems as well.
Okay, that's a good point. And then there are data audits.
Data audits, those are like those thorough health checkups oh. for our data system.
So audits go beyond just checking for errors.
They do.
They look at the overall health and security Yay. Of our data.
It involves a comprehensive assessment
okay.
of data quality, security policies, compliance requirements.
So like having an independent inspector come in.
Yes.
And make sure everything is up to code.
Exactly. Make sure we're following all the rules and regulations.
And the sources even shared a story of an audit uncovering a financial fraud scheme.
Oh, yes. They can be quite revealing.
Yeah, they can be pretty powerful.
They help us identify vulnerabilities, mm-hmm. areas for improvement.
Right.
And when we're dealing with these massive data sets,
yeah.
where examining every single record is just not feasible, we can use sampling techniques.
So sampling is like taking a taste of the soup.
Yes.
To see if it needs more salt.
A perfect analogy.
Okay.
By randomly selecting a representative subset of our data,
mm-hmm.
we can make inferences about the overall quality
okay.
without having to analyze that entire data set.
So we're not drowning in data.
We're not drowning, exactly. Yeah. We're taking a manageable sip.
The sources use the example of an automotive manufacturer
right.
testing a subset of fasteners.
Yes, to make sure the whole batch is good.
Right, so it's a clever way to balance
yes.
efficiency with accuracy.
Efficiency and accuracy.
And finally, we have cross-validation.
Cross-validation. This is where we put our models to the test.
Okay, so we're testing our models to see how well they perform.
Exactly. It involves dividing our data into multiple subsets.
Okay.
Training the model on one subset and then testing its accuracy on another.
So, like, giving it a practice exam.
A practice exam.
Before the real test.
To make sure it's ready for the real world.
And that helps us avoid overfitting.
Right, overfitting, yes. That's where our model performs really well in the training data.
Okay.
But then poorly on new, unseen data.
Right, so it hasn't really learned anything.
It's memorized the answers instead of understanding the concepts.
Got it. Well, we've really taken a deep dive into data quality today.
We have. We've covered a lot of ground.
We've explored the challenges, the dimensions, the techniques, even the methods for validating our data.
It's been quite a journey.
It really has.
Right.
And it's clear that maintaining high quality data is not just a one-time task.
No.
But a continuous process.
A continuous process. Absolutely.
It requires vigilance, a keen eye for detail, and a willingness to embrace the right tools and techniques.
I could have said it better myself. It's about building this culture of data awareness and integrity within our organizations.
And that brings us to the end of our deep dive into data quality.
I hope you found this exploration as fascinating as I have.
It's been a pleasure, as always.
Likewise.
Remember, high-quality data is the foundation.
The foundation.
The sound decisions, valuable insights, and ultimately, achieving our goals.
Well said.
So, the next time you encounter a data set, don't just take it at face value.
Right.
Put on your data detective hat.
Ask those critical questions.
Yeah, and use the tools and techniques we've discussed today to ensure that your data is truly working for you.
And not against you.
Exactly. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.